Ash, have you done a direct consumer test?
I'm a little hesitant because I don't want my DNA available in databases or being sold to other companies, because it's not just my DNA, it's also my family's. And I've heard that some companies sell consumers' data and we don't really know how it could be used in the future.
I think that's valid in a lot of people's concerns, and that's why Secret Sequence started. They don't ask for your name, address, or any personal information. And most importantly, like you pointed out, they don't sell your data. It remains private. So if you listeners want to check it out, Secret Sequence is offering you an exclusive $25 off two kits or more, which you can redeem at secretsequence.com with code DNA today.
How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me,
the genes of you and me,
we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.
Hello, you're listening to DNA Today, a genetics podcast and radio show. I'm your host, Kira Deneen. On this show, I explore genetics and how it impacts our health through conversations with leaders in genetics, such as genetic counselors, researchers, doctors, and patient advocates. This episode is part of my new crossover series with one of my other podcasts, Advancing Dentistry, where I interview dentists. If you're interested in hearing more conversations like these, you can search Advancing Dentistry in your podcast app or, you know, wherever you listen to this show, or go to addent.com. That's A-D-D-E-N-T. New episodes are released on the first of every month, and I started the show back in June 2018, so there are 19 episodes to binge if you're interested in this. I interview dentists about topics like minimally invasive dentistry, practice building, science communications, a lot more topics than that. But on this episode, Lauren Winter joins me, and we're both genetic counseling graduate students, as most of you know. She's at the University of Pittsburgh's genetic counseling program, and she's a research assistant involved in the COHRA2, COHRA SMILE projects at the Center for Craniofacial and Dental Genetics. So we discuss this project and explore dental genetics in general in this episode. If you're considering or already in grad school for genetic counseling, it's often great to hear students talk about their experience with their thesis projects. So lucky for you, this episode, the project we're talking about is actually Lauren's thesis project. So it can give you an idea of what a thesis project looks like, and hers is really interesting. So I'm excited to jump into this. And in the future, I'm sure I'll have more episodes about thesis projects, maybe a more general episode exploring that in the future. Thank you so much, Lauren Winter, for coming on the show. Really excited to dive into dental genetics on this episode.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So how much do we know about genetics' role in oral health in general? Or do we know very little or a lot?
Both, I would say. So we know a little about a lot of different things.
I like that answer. That's very politically stated. Yeah.
Yeah, so oral health is an umbrella term that we use to cover the health of everything in your mouth, your teeth, your gums, your throat, the bones around your mouth. And we care a lot about our oral health because oral health problems tend to be chronic conditions, and they can provide us insight to problems elsewhere in the body as well. So these are conditions like cavities, periodontitis, gingivitis, and oral cancers. And we especially think about cavities because though Americans have relatively good overall oral health, cavities is still the most prevalent chronic disease in childhood. So this is a public health issue, and what we know through a lot of research is that oral health outcomes follow what the world of genetics likes to call a multifactorial risk pattern, and genetics plays a role in the development of many of these aspects of oral health that I've already mentioned. So again, we know a little about a lot of different things that may contribute to these different parts of our mouth, the teeth, the gums, the throat, bones.
And are there specific genes that have been correlated with those aspects of oral health, dental health, of saying the tooth structure or being more susceptible to having caries, cavities? Or is it really more of a general, like we see that these specific genes are involved with dental health in general, and it's not down to specific areas?
So it's not necessarily known whether it's down to specific areas. The research that I do, our group is really kind of, I would say, paving the way for a lot of this. In 2011, our Research Center published a paper that was the first genome-wide association study for childhood susceptibility to caries or cavities. Caries is the dental term for cavities. And so through this work, we found that there were some specific genetic loci that we could say with some certainty were associated with a risk to develop cavities. But to that point, a lot of it has not been replicated yet.
So when you're looking at this data and seeing what is coming up, doing those genome-wide association studies of looking literally throughout the genome to see if there's any changes or specific genes that are related to dental conditions and aspects of that, are there particular genes that you're looking at and zeroing in on and saying, okay, these are ones that are really standing out? Or is it all of these small changes that are throughout the genome? Or maybe a mix, I don't know.
In 2011, the researchers that I work for published a paper that was the first genome-wide association study that was looking at genetic causes for childhood development of cavities. And through that GWAS, what we've identified are regions on three different chromosomes, 1, 11, and 17, specifically, that house genes that are of interest in replicating this research to see if those might be genes of interest in enamel development or tooth development in general, and even in like interplay with fluoride in the mouth. So there are some specific genes that we can look at, but really it's regions of interest on those chromosomes right now that we know about.
It's very interesting because this research is so cutting edge and new that in a lot of areas of genetics, we've been looking at things for decades. But with this, I mean, I haven't really heard of dental genetics too much until I kind of came across the work that you've been doing. It makes me wonder, like, if we'll end up in the near future having different genetic testing for these conditions of when you're going in to see a dentist, if that's something people will end up doing so that they can tailor their care if they know that they're an elevated risk for developing those cavities, caries, like that's where my mind goes. And I'm wondering if, like, do you see that being in the near future, or are we like way off from that?
Yeah, I think what you've described is like precision genetics in dentistry.
Yeah.
So I think that this kind of disease definitely fits that model. I don't necessarily think that it's, tomorrow. But I think that what we understand so far is that there is a heritability factor to this susceptibility to have this higher rate of cavities in some younger populations. And maybe someday we will be able to tease out, when you go to the dentist now, there's a lot more factors that they're concerned about than your genetics. Like, they're not taking a family history because we know that there are other things that predispose you to have more cavities, like your sugar intake or fluoride in your water. And so I think maybe throughout more research, we might identify if genetics has anything to do or more to do with some of the interplay with those other factors that lead to some of the causes of cavities. So yeah, I think maybe someday.
Yeah. And I think that's an important point you highlighted, that genetics could be playing like one role in this, but it's really that interplay where you can be having a kid that has a lot of sugar intake and another kid's having the same sugar intake, but it's the genetics that may predispose one of them to be developing those cavities, caries earlier, but the sugar intake is probably going to be the bigger problem than the genetics factor. But taking a look at all those pieces, once we learn a little bit more about how that's actually working.
Yeah, and further from that, developing the treatments based on the genetics is still yet to be determined what utility that has based on the, extent of the impact.
Right, that's a good point. Just because we can point to genes that it's causing doesn't mean that we can then fix it. So
right.
We're better at finding things than fixing things.
Unfortunately, sometimes that's the truth.
So I want to learn more about the study that you're involved in, factors contributing to oral health disparities in Appalachia. Would love to hear what you're focused on, what you're hoping to get out of this. What's your elevator pitch for this when someone asks you at a party?
Sure. So we know through previous studies at our center that children living in rural Appalachia demonstrate poor oral health and elevated rates of cavities earlier in life compared to national averages. So we've developed a longitudinal study to further investigate why that might be. So there are two studies that we have going side by side, actually, which is really the same study in two different cohorts of women and their children. And so the goal of these studies is to investigate the genetic, environmental, behavioral, and microbial contributions to the disproportionately high rate of cavities that we're seeing in these children living in Appalachia.
And so how does this work? You're collecting some kind of oral sample and performing testing on this. Is that where you're starting after you're consenting them, obviously, and doing that portion of it?
Yeah, so I'll walk you through a little bit about what a visit typically looks like with a participant, because that's probably the best way to understand what all we're trying to capture.
Definitely.
So when someone comes in, it's a mom and their child, and that's kind of our study pair. And the samples that we collect are for DNA and RNA extraction to do genome-wide association studies. So we're collecting saliva samples, and we track the salivary flow rate for mom to see how much saliva that she might naturally produce. We record the saliva's pH for both the mom and the child, and then we're taking samples of the plaque and from any dental lesions that we see on the teeth, so any developing cavities or any spots that are decayed in the mouth. We take samples from them to send to do some microbial analysis. And part of my job is to process the saliva samples that we send to our collaborators at the University of Michigan. And a lab there headed by Dr. Betsy Foxman focuses on studying the effects of the oral microbiome on oral health in this group of study participants. So that's one of the things that we do as well. And then at those visits, we're also capturing information about the child's growth, height, weight, head circumference. We're taking 3D images of their face and their hands to see how this development goes over the course of time, and as well as some behavioral and dietary surveys that we do that moms fill out for us every 3 months, actually. So we're getting this kind of throughout the year and as they grow, and we're getting kind of a snapshot of what they're doing.
So you're taking quite a bit of data. It's not like you're focused on just one area of, okay, you're taking an oral sample and then looking at the microbiome there, which, I mean, that is in itself so much data right there of oral microbiome,
right.
But you're taking a lot of information in. How long are you following these participants for?
Yeah, we're leaving no stone unturned here.
Definitely. I would think you're going to have so much data, you're like, where do I even start?
Exactly. We're studying these participants. They have the option to be involved in 3 phases of the study. So the first phase is until the children are 2. So moms are enrolled when they're in their second trimester of pregnancy, and that's when they do their first visit. And then, so that first phase goes once a year until the children are 2. And then the second phase is until the children are 6. And then the third phase that we are entering now with some of our oldest recruits as in through their 9th birthday. So we're getting about 10 years of data on these kids.
That's fantastic. And so you must have a team of people to be able to be processing this. You mentioned sending off samples to University of Michigan. And so they're doing more of the microbiome work there. Are they focused in on any certain types of bacteria, or is it really just looking at a snapshot of the oral microbiome at that point? Because as we know, the microbiome changes, unlike human genetics.
That's a good question. I don't know the specific answer to whether or not they're looking at specific strains, but I know that they are trying to tease out this relationship between what I think makes more sense. I don't have a dentistry background, but I think what makes sense in the world of dentistry is looking at the rate between remineralization and demineralization of the tooth. So where that breakdown is happening in the enamel and causing a cavity is what I understand. So I think that what they are doing is looking for any factors in the microbiome that they have found to enhance that demineralization process that's not helping the tooth protect itself.
Okay, so they're seeing if there's any kind of changes that are happening at the same time where demineralization is happening and trying to connect and figure out that relationship.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. And so with the other data you're collecting, you said you're taking pH, which I imagine kind of goes along with looking at the microbiome and seeing what those pH levels are, and very important in dentistry of looking at that. You mentioned a couple other points of data, one being to see the growth of the child. What are you using that information for?
So this is something that we want to know. You know, BMI, height, weight are important factors when you're thinking about including a child's diet and, you know, how many cavities they're producing. So this is the best way we can capture BMI. And so while we're not looking at the genetics of BMI necessarily, it's helping us understand a little bit about it's kind of a quality measure for that diet data that we're getting. And also there may or may not be some confounding factors in between there, but the growth and development overall of the child or the child's overall health status is not necessarily separate from their oral health status. So it's important to capture all of that data at once.
And so along with that, are you looking at what a child's diet is and taking that into account? Or is that almost like, how are you going to keep track of a child's diet?
Right. So there's a little, I mean, both of those are the right answer. We try as best we can to get an accurate picture of their diet. And this is really where a lot of studies, I think, in my review have fallen short, is that diet can't be predicted or really accurately captured, especially, like you said, for a child. But it is important when thinking about the microbiome, and it's important in thinking about what the child's eating and their sugar intake and what they're exposed to over the lifespan. Whether or not they breastfeed is an important factor that we want to know about. So just a lot of things to try and capture all at once that may or may not help are important, and to have that data that we can use to see if there's a relationship there or not. And we do get that diet data every 3 months on the kids. So hopefully over time, it's evening itself out to the point where it is reliable.
Yeah, because I would imagine that's really important information to have, is it being a major factor of someone's oral health. What's going in their mouth every day?
Right.
What other factors seem to be contributing to this high rate of dental cavities caries in children in this area?
So that's the million-dollar question.
If you had the answer, you probably wouldn't have to do the study now, would you?
If I had the answer, I think the NIH would pay me a lot of money. So, yeah, that's definitely the motivation for this whole study, is what factors seem to be contributing to this higher rate of dental caries in the children in Appalachia. We're observing that they have cavities at a higher rate earlier in life than national averages. We compare this with National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey data. So our study is designed to uncover and account for the multitude of factors to narrow in on the most likely reasons for this higher rate of cavities, and also to discern if there's anything about the population, the demographics, that make them different from other areas of the United States, so that we can tailor public health interventions to that area. But since I'm not directly involved with the analysis of our data, I don't think I will speak specifically on our findings. But to echo what I touched on earlier, this is a multifactorial disease when we think about just even cavity development in general. And there's a lot of different factors contributing, a little bit here and there. And so I'm excited to see what comes out of all this research, because it is a large, large study.
Yeah, it's very long that some of these children you're following, they're approaching the age of 9. So that's a long time. And the fact that you started, you know, while they were still fetuses is like, you've
right,
really
right.
looked at collected so much data on them. So looking at why this area in Appalachia was chosen? Like, how does it compare to the rest of the U.S.? Is it drastically different or just enough different to say, let's focus on researching this population?
Sure. So there are some factors about Appalachia in general that we know over time that they have poorer oral health outcomes. The question is why. West Virginia is one of the areas in our study, and they were chosen because West Virginia is the one state that is entirely encompassed in Appalachia. And so participants in West Virginia come from throughout the state, and the Pittsburgh group comes from the Pittsburgh area. So we are kind of considered, we are the largest urban area in Appalachia. So that's why we are included in the study. So there are even some comparisons that we're trying to see if can be made between the two groups from rural to more urban Appalachia to see if there's something specific about rural Appalachia that makes them predisposed to this disease.
That's interesting, not only to compare to the rest of the U.S., but then within the subpopulation of the groups you're looking at. So, yeah, so much data. I can't imagine going through all of this.
It is a wealth of knowledge.
Definitely. And so you're also planning another project, which is going to be your thesis project, from what I understand, that's going to be exploring the relationship between genetic factors, dental caries, cavities, and BMI. How much do we currently know about this relationship, or are you going to really be trailblazing understanding this?
So to date, we have not a certain definition to the relationship between BMI and cavities. This relationship has been hypothesized, and a lot of my literature review seems to say that there are confounding factors to finding a relationship between BMI and dental caries. You know, is there an underlying mechanism that's the same between the two? Is it a one in, one out? Is it this one exposure that gives you both? It is hypothesized that there is a relationship between these two of some sort, but there are so many confounding factors to be commented on in a lot of the research that this relationship has not been defined. And there's a lot of covariate factors that have a really big impact on the significance of these results. And some of them include diet and socioeconomic status. And we have that data in our study. So what I'm going to try to develop here is within just the group that we have information about, putting together some analyses to see if what kind of relationship there is between BMI and caries, and then see if there's an impact of any, when any covariates are added to that relationship, to try and define really what the relationship is with the covariate and see what their impact on the other relationship is. So the relationship between BMI and caries is probably one that's too large for my thesis project, but hopefully I'll be able to get some good results about what the degree of impact is of the covariate factors in that relationship.
And as you said, probably hard to take out all the other factors that are playing a role in that. You can't exactly say, okay, we're just seeing the impact of BMI on caries, but taking into account everything else that's playing a role in that. And I'm sure just, you know, writing up your thesis project, you're going to have to cover a lot of that information and talk about those factors and how that's playing a role.
Yeah, I think for sure. You know, even like we talked about earlier, when you go to the dentist and there's not one thing we can pinpoint, you know, why you're getting more cavities than somebody else, or, you know, this and that, I think that really speaks to the research as well, is we can't pinpoint it in one individual, and then the relationship on a grand scale is also not, you know, really defined. So there's going to be a lot to cover.
And how do you think that if, you know, this information, it's very early on, but if this research was to be continued and really flushed out beyond maybe your graduation, how do you think this information would be used in the future on either a public health kind of scale or just individual patients, of saying, you know, your BMI is higher. Do you think that that's going to make an impact on dentists giving patients information on their cavity risk level?
Yeah, I think that, you know, hopefully someday down the line that this can impact a public health intervention, and putting general knowledge out there for providers and for people about, you know, how these things impact each other and how taking care of your body and taking care of your teeth can be done kind of at once. And it's not two separate entities, because in order to eat, everything comes through your mouth. So these two health systems are very intricately linked. And I think that the more we bring them together and look at them as one system can help people, because people are one system. So finding ways to make achieving health easier for people is what public health is all about in my mind. And so that's really what I hope, is that this can help inform some interventions that we need. And that's why I think it's important to start with this one study population that we have so much data about.
And very advantageous to look at healthcare from that, as you said, kind of whole person perspective, and not saying, you know, we have different areas of healthcare. We got dentistry, we got genetic counseling happening, but to be able to say, okay, let's take more of a looking at the whole picture and saying how are all of these aspects playing a role into someone's overall health, and not getting too focused on one area, of really having that perspective. And, you know, we've touched on precision medicine today. I guess that's where my brain is at.
Yeah, for sure.
And just how that's going to be really playing a role in the next, maybe, you know, now 5-10 years. Do you see any other ways that genetics is going to end up having a larger role in dentistry? Of, you know, we talked about maybe genetic testing being involved, but even just other areas that maybe I'm not thinking of. I'm just thinking that we may be seeing new careers roles from this marriage of genetics and dentistry.
Yeah, I think in thinking about my project a little bit, you know, if I could design this to be perfect, one of the things that I would like to be able to do is then when we find these candidate genes, if they could be applied to the model as the covariate factor, it would help us understand the relationship of the gene in there. And so then that would open up this whole wide world for what the genetic testing could or could not inform us of with, you know, thinking about dentistry. But I think other ways that genetics plays a role in dentistry are in screening. And we haven't talked about this because it's not part of the research that I do, but there are numerous genetic syndromes that have dental anomalies as part of them. And I think the more that we can help genetics enter dentistry, the better dentists can be about screening for those kinds of genetic syndromes and be better equipped to service people with a dental anomaly in that regard. And even thinking about one that comes to mind is holoprosencephaly, which can be as mild as one front tooth in the middle instead of two. And so that's something that a dentist might pick up before any other provider might. So I think that there are ways in which the two can marry and find information from the other in multiple ways that aren't quite so far away as precision medicine for dentists.
Yeah, that would be just today if dentists had more of an education on, which, I mean, you know, there's only so much you can cover in 4 years of dental school, but to cover genetics to a certain degree for them to recognize enough to say, oh, I think you should see a geneticist or a genetic counselor that might be advantageous to you, because, you know, just knowing enough to be able to refer out to an expert in genetics, I think that would be just fantastic. And really cool idea you have about, with all of the data you're looking at through this study and seeing if looking at it through the lens of who has variants in certain genes, and seeing if there's really any relationships that stand out from that, that would be really interesting to look at. Maybe that's a thesis project for someone in the year of 2021 or something, but that'd
be lovely.
Yeah, that would be really interesting. And it's hard to think that you wouldn't find something in all of that. And with so many different, you know, originally coming from that 2011 study that you mentioned, the genome-wide association study, that there's probably certain genes from that that you're like, ooh, we could target these. So yeah, you're just totally, you know, inspiring me and just thinking of all the ways we can go in this field. And you know, maybe we'll check back with you and see where you are in 10 years and see what you're doing in all of this.
It would be exciting to see this go somewhere. And like I said, I do not have a dental background, so this could all be something that I have created to be very great in my head, but we will see by the end of this year when I defend this thesis if we've actually found something from this, which I'm excited to find out, because like I said, the study that I work for has a wealth and breadth of data for me to develop something really meaningful here, and I'm really excited to start on it because this is something that impacts all of us. We all have teeth and dental problems. So, you know, putting this out there in the world of public health is something that I think is really important.
Yeah, it's all very interesting work. And you may not have a formal dental education, but you know far more than other people in genetics. So we'll give you like an honorary one there.
Lovely. I love it.
Well, thank you so much, Lauren, for coming on the show and just sharing this with me. It's very interesting to just hear the connections between genetics and dentistry and all the areas that we can be going from this. I think this is an area of genetics to really be looking at and checking back with, because there's just so many different ways that the two can be interplayed, and seeing all the new information that you'll be finding out through this project and beyond.
Well, thanks again for having me. This was a great way for me to make sure that I understand what's going on in my thesis work.
You definitely do. I'll give you an A on that.
Oh, thank you.
To learn more about the Center for Craniofacial and Dental Genetics, you can follow them on Facebook and Twitter. They are at CCDGPitt. It's the same for Facebook and Twitter, at CCDGPitt. And to hear more from Lauren, you can follow her on Twitter. She's at LarenGela. And I'm going to link both of those in the show notes of this episode. And I wanted to mention again, if you're interested in learning more about dentistry, you can check out one of my other podcasts, Advancing Dentistry, in your podcast app, or by going to adent.com. That's ADDENT.com. New episodes drop on the first of every month, and there's already 19 episodes to stream. Very similar to this show, half hour, doing an interview. It's just with dentists on that show. Also feels fitting to mention that I host two other shows, one about mental health called Insight Says, and another about the bioscience industry with a Connecticut focus called Working for Health. You can stream both those by searching their titles on your podcast app, or better yet, they're all linked on my website that you guys all know by now, dnapodcast.com. On Twitter, I'm at dnapodcast, so same as the website. Instagram is a little different, at dnaradio. And any questions you have for myself or Lauren, or any question about the show, a different episode, send them into info@dnapodcast.com. And I should do this more, but it would be great to see you leave a rating and review on iTunes or whatever podcast player you listen to this on. That really helps other people like yourself discover the show and get a lot out of it. So I'd really appreciate if you can go, especially to Apple, and leave a rating and review there.
Have you guys started your holiday shopping yet?
Oh, no, I really need to.
It's always hard to come up with ideas, but I'm looking at really cool genetic-themed gifts.
A cool gift for families, actually, is the Ancestry Kit from Secret Sequence. You can find out where your family's from, including really specific regions.
And you can probably order for both your parents, because then you get to see both sides of your family.
Yeah, so when I did the kit, my top countries were Ireland, Britain, and Poland. And I knew about Ireland and Poland on my dad's side, but my mom's family we didn't know as well, so I learned for mostly from Britain, and specifically a region my family lived in was Lancashire.
Oh, nice.
My grandparents are from four different countries, so I'm actually really curious to confirm what regions in each of those countries my ancestors are from. I'm glad I don't have to sacrifice having my private info in databases, because Secret Sequence doesn't sell it to other companies, so my data stays secure.
Well, sounds like you both found something great for everyone on your list.
Exactly. So if you guys want to try this as well, head over to secretsequence.com and use promo code DNA today for $25 off two kits or more. Doing this also supports the show. Again, it's the name of the show, DNA today, at secretsequence.com for $25 off two kits or more. Thanks for listening, and join me next time to learn and discover new advances in the world of genetics.
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.